listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the Survival in Motion podcast. On today's episode, we have a very special guest, Brian Duff, who is the podcaster-in-chief at the Mind for Survival podcast. And I've listened to a lot of his episodes, and it's a great survival podcast, and I want to welcome Brian to the Survival in Motion podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, Cal.
Yeah, I've been following your podcast. In fact, I think we began right around the same time. Of course, right. You've put in a lot more episodes than I have, but they're good episodes. And
thanks, man.
Like you and I were talking, I think you've got a real good persona online. You're always positive and always encouraging.
It's completely fake, I'll tell you that now.
Anyway, I enjoy listening to your episodes of your podcast. I was wondering if you could maybe share some of your background with our listeners here and where you came from and what got you interested in preparing.
Yeah, so I grew up in Southern California in Los Angeles. I grew up surfing and snow skiing and wearing flip-flops year round. I think what probably got me started in preparedness and all that was one of my earliest memories is waking up in, I believe it was a 1971 Selmar earthquake. And having my mom get me out of bed because of like stuff was falling and all that.
Oh, that was a serious one. I read about it. Yeah.
Bunch of building collapses. Yeah. And it was a pretty significant earthquake. So, and then growing up in Southern California, you know, just earthquakes and brush fires and all that. So it kind of got me started in it and, you know, did the Boy Scouts and was a lifeguard in high school and just worked my way on up, ended up as a firefighter paramedic. Went in the military and did some time in the Army, went overseas as a security contractor, worked for Blackwater, and you were, a bunch of other companies in Africa.
You were an Army Ranger, too.
Yep. So
pretty
just
intense.
Kind of been my life for a while, and I'm not a bushcraft guy like we were talking about earlier. You know, I'm not necessarily a guy that, hey, we don't have any backpacks. We're lost. Yeah, you're probably not going to want me around.
Well, I was surprised to read that you were a former Army Ranger. I mean, that's pretty intense, as I understand it. And how long was the training for that?
You go through basic Army training, advanced infantry training, they call it. Then you go to airborne school, and then you go over. And at the time, it was a three-week selection course where they just kick your butt all day, every day. And you have to do a lot of move 20 miles or 12 miles in a certain amount of time and certain physical standards. And then it was just they would – get everybody out, for example, when you show up and they just say, hey guys, we're going to do push-ups till 10 people quit. And so they go through that till they whittle it down. And I was just one of the guys that was too stupid to quit. So all my friends that quit were going to Italy and all these cool places, and I was staying in Georgia. So,
oh, man. Huh.
And not that Georgia isn't cool. I love Georgia, but I wouldn't mind living in Italy for a while.
That'd yeah, well, I imagine in the summer in Georgia, outdoors might be different, you know. Indoors might be better, of course. So where'd you go as an Army Ranger? What assignments did you have?
Oh, I was stationed at Fort Benning, Georgia, and that's where I ended up actually living down there for about 15 years. So,
oh, okay.
There's three range battalions. There's two in Georgia, one in Savannah, Georgia, over on the coast, one at Fort Benning, Georgia, and then one at Fort Lewis, Washington.
Huh, okay. I thought I heard one of your episodes of Mind for Survival that you talked about having been in Afghanistan and Iraq. But that was not as a ranger, right?
No, nope, I was with Blackwater in Iraq, another company in Afghanistan. I also worked for Dying Corps for a while. I went to Africa with a company called USIS. I stayed overseas for about 11 years okay. or so, 12 years.
Are you able to talk about what you did with Blackwater and Dying Corps?
Yeah.
Is that like combat type stuff or less exciting?
It's in a combat zone.
Oh,
so
yeah.
There's
okay.
a lot of stuff blowing up and I went over there. I wanted, you know, a buddy of mine says, hey, they need former special operations guys who are also paramedics over in Iraq to do some diplomatic security stuff. And I was like, oh, that sounds like an interesting job. And so I went over there and I was with Blackwater from 2005 through 2008. And we were doing diplomatic protection missions, taking diplomats all over Iraq to do the reconstruction and organize a bunch of the humanitarian relief that they were trying to bring into Iraq at the time. And so we would transport those diplomats just wherever they needed to go.
Huh. What level of diplomats, like congressmen and senators or what? Or State Department?
Everybody from low-level Department of State personnel all the way up to senators. I wasn't up in Baghdad where the president and vice president would go, but yeah, we had some senators and secretary of state, congresspeople, and everybody on down. For example, USAID was building water treatment plants, built water treatment plants all along the Euphrates and Tigris rivers, because the locals never had fresh water before, right? So They wanted fresh water, they'd have to, whether it was fresh or not, it might have been in a bottle out of town kind of thing. So it was one of the better projects I saw when I was over there, that they built a lot of really good water treatment plants along the rivers where anybody from the local villages could go up and get fresh water that was clean.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I interrupt you. You were in Blackwater and then Dyne Corps in Africa, right?
No, I was USIS in Africa.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And back in Iraq with Dyne Corps.
Were you ever in Afghanistan?
Yep, I was in Afghanistan working for a little while before I went over with Blackwater.
Okay. There was a video floating around the internet at one point about a 747 took off from Afghanistan and it stalled and it was a horrible crash. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I saw that. It was actually a C-17, Air Force C-17, and my understanding was it had a load. They were carrying cargo inside, and that somehow either the straps holding the cargo down, whatever, something broke, and that load shifted, and that caused the plane to stall out.
Oh, I saw that. Oh, that was terrible. And then after your time with private contractors, then what happened?
I went to work for the State Department for a while, overseeing some diplomatic security programs overseas.
Oh, okay.
Came back, kind of did the same thing again in the private sector. And then I left D.C. and came out to Vegas and spent about a year and a half as the North American Rescue Training Director.
Cool. Yeah. And you're doing that. That's your full-time job and your part-time gig is Mind for Survival?
No, I'm going all in on Mind for Survival right now. I got a bunch of stuff going on. I've been quiet on the internet, but I have a lot of stuff going on in the background.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Classes I'm putting together and other things. So, yeah.
All right. Cool. So I imagine you had a lot of gun training with the military there in Blackwater, right?
Yeah. I carried a M4 and a pistol for a lot of years.
Okay. You have a permit nowadays?
I actually have my stuff out here in Nevada, and then I had one back in Virginia. I've had a concealed carry for a lot of years.
Oh, okay. Our listeners like to ask, what's your favorite firearm? And if you have any thoughts on what everybody else carries or stuff like that.
My favorite firearm is the one I have when something bad happens, if I need it. But I prefer the Glocks, the Glock 43 and the Glock 19 are my two preferred. I carried a Glock for a lot of years, so it's what I'm super familiar with.
Okay.
So that's why I carry that. And that's what I encourage everybody in. Whatever firearm they want to use or if they want to carry one, practice and practice and practice with it and know that one. And, you know, whether it's your Kimber 45 or, you know, your Glock or your SIG, whatever it is, just be really good and proficient with whatever one you decide to have.
Yeah. So you use the M4 a lot. And so I imagine AR-15 is something you're partial to. Is that right?
Yeah. Just out of familiarity. I've carried it for so much and it's just almost second nature for me, if not it is second nature. So I prefer the M4, but I mean, the AK is a great, great rifle too.
Yeah, they say that's the rifle that the one achievement from the communist world is the AK-47.
Well, it's definitely one of them. Yeah, I mean, it's built so rugged and it takes a beating. And the round's a great round too.
Yeah.
You know, 308 round's a good round.
Yeah, I've shot it a few times, and it would amaze me how loud it was. I had ear protection on, but it still made my ears ring after having, you know, the ear protection on there. But it's a great gun, though.
Yeah.
Hey, I've checked out a lot of your episodes on Mind for Survival, and you've recently had the RV prepper on, and you had an episode about home invasions.
And, right. David Helms is the RV prepper. He's a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. You talked a different episode about home invasions and also about prepping with older adults. The fishing episode, that was good information in that. Anyway, it seems to me like Mind for Survival does kind of like what I try to do, which is discuss topics out there that are not usually talked about. You know, it's different stuff. That's one of the reasons I like your podcast.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, I love talking about EMPs, man. I love it. And I imagine other people love it too. I think a lot of people love talking about EMPs because we all talk about it so much. But there might be something else that happens other than that EMP. So I kind of want, you know, at least put it out there. You know, I look at like a lot of the training stuff. If you at least think about it beforehand, when it happens, it's not as surprising and you're able to make better decisions. So
You had one episode with Johnny Jacks, and I had an email I had an email exchange with him. Very nice guy, very friendly, and at the same time really, really competent and experienced. He's written a couple of books out there.
He's a Vietnam Green Beret. I think he lived that bush for a while.
Yeah, I think he said something like he feels strange sleeping on a bed as opposed to just the floor. That's a pretty intense guy, you know?
Right, yeah.
And you've got an episode on bug-out bags, too, and that was really informative, I thought.
I love the bug-out bags thing. I mean, that's what you did on your episode, right? You got all the feedback on? Or your book?
Yeah, the book, too. But I had an episode on bug-out bags, and I kind of incorporated it into just my car because I spend so much time in my car, so therefore that's kind of an expanded bug out bag with the understanding that it's way too much to carry around. But if I'm in my car and some emergency happens, then I'll know what I can throw away, you know? So that was kind of the philosophy about that episode. My philosophy about bug out bags in general is just probably pack too much, you know, but throw away what you know you're not going to need.
Well, that's how Chris Weatherman starts his book. Was it Home Alone? The very first book.
Yeah, Going Home, I think.
Going Home, that's it. When the EMP or whatever happens, Morgan gets out and goes through all his stuff and repacks his bag and leaves what he doesn't need, you know.
Yeah.
Goes through his stuff. Yeah, I think that, you know, I look at it this way. That car, with all your stuff in it, may be your bug out location at some point, depending on if something bad enough happens. And I have a friend that was going to UC Santa Cruz years ago. I mean, we're, you know, probably talking 30 years ago now, when they had a big earthquake up there out of San Francisco, the San Francisco earthquake, and it wrecked the town, and she ended up living in her car for like 4 or 5 days because she couldn't get out. And so that car might be the place you live for a little while if you have to. So yeah, pack it with what you need. I mean,
yeah, in one of my books, Dirt Cheap Valuable Survival Retreat, I talked about just buying an extra large old car with that idea. That might be something you have to wind up living in, you know, or at least you can pack a whole lot of stuff in it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe you get to the, I don't know, you get from where you're going and you're not sure how far you're going to get, and you might cross different terrain features or whatever along the way. Overpacking just gives you more options, you know, to get to where you need to get to.
You know, there was a case recently, well, maybe like a couple years ago, of a family driving north from California into Oregon, and then the huge snow came, and then they took a couple of wrong turns, and they got stuck way out in the middle of nowhere in a snowbank somewhere. And the family stayed in the car, and the father, you know, well-meaning person that he was, decided to go out and get some help, and he wound up dead, and the family was rescued. And they were still in their car, cold, but still alive, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you were lost in your car, getting to where you were trying to go, and you're lost.
Yeah.
Getting out of your car and trying to find something, I get it. I totally understand. And especially, I wasn't there in the moment. And you know what? I'm lost in my car. I'd rather be lost in my car than lost on foot, because the chances of him actually finding it probably, you know, it doesn't, obviously it wasn't good. So at least go off and look around, but make sure you get back to your car, because you can control the environment a little bit inside of that car.
Yeah. And I think as they backtracked it, they found out that he was pretty much just circling around the area and never really got that far. It was a pretty sad situation.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your favorite preparation subject, if you have any?
I'm kind of all mindset, man. Like I think we're talking about earlier, I'm big on having the mental capacity to do something that I think there are times when, you know, especially when you're in a very intense situation, have you not spent time preparing your mind to deal with the volume of information, the amount of activity, whatever's going on, you know, if it's insanity going on around you or what, having the mental capacity to problem solve in that environment and problem solve effectively or more effectively to me is worth, you know, you never know when something's going to happen. And, you know, I know there are people that say, I'm always prepared. Well, not 100% of the time for most people. I mean, maybe, for those of you that are, congratulations. I'm not always prepared when I go out to the level I would like to be. And that might be out of convenience for me. It could be out of laziness, whatever it is. But there's times that it happens.
Yeah.
So there are times where I feel that people, that the best tool they might have at their hands outside of what's on their keychain or something like that is their mental capacity to avoid situations or get through bad situations as fast as possible.
You mentioned in one of your episodes, and I don't remember it that well, but OODA Loop, I think it was called?
The OODA Loop, yep.
Yeah. What was that, if you remember?
So that was the creation of a guy named Colonel John Boyd, and he was big into situational awareness. It's always been everywhere, but it wasn't really captured as sort of a science or a philosophy or a way of being until actually a German fighter pilot in World War I started writing down some thoughts on how to combat, how to do combat better. Mm-hmm. And those have trickled down. And what happened was after, I think it was around Korea, I think Boyd was a Vietnam era guy. He came up with this mindset on how to approach not just combat, but he was focused on combat, but it's applied across all kinds of things. And OODA Loop stands for observe, orient, decide, and act. And that goes in a loop. So, for example, you're driving your car down the road. You see someone step off the curb in the other lane. Now, so you observe that. You orient yourself to it going, oh, and what orientation is you're taking all of your life experiences and the knowledge you have up to that point to put in to discern a thought about whatever it is you just observed. So that way you can go, oh, this is a threat, or, you know, this person's just stepping in the curb. Now, if you're driving down the street and a car comes barreling through a red light, by working in a loop, if you can take, you observe and orient, and that's what situational awareness is, observe and orient. And you, so you see a situation, you interpret it and understand it as best as possible.
Yeah.
Then decide is decide upon a course of action. And then A is act. You take that action. That goes in a loop. Okay.
Okay.
And so we're constantly observing, orient ourselves, making a decision, you know, hey, I'm walking down the street. Everything's fine. My decision is to keep walking and I keep walking. And that kind of goes on subconsciously and consciously at times. What Boyd came up with was when you're doing all that thought process about a situation and like say as a fighter pilot and the enemy plane is that you're coming up against him or her is doing the same thing. You're both trying to outthink each other. So if you've trained on a situation and if you've thought through all these different maneuvers and lived it and received high-level training, and you know, you think about it maybe when you're flying your plane, you're driving down the car, when you see that plane in that situation, the enemy plane, you will react faster because you've already thought this through. So it speeds up your loop. And the idea is to try to basically get your loop to intercede within his loop. And then that usually gives a person the advantage. Now, there's always luck and everything else that goes involved into it. But it's a way of just trying to think through things in life a little bit and be more aware in case something happens.
Okay. Yeah, I was about to say the mind preparedness sounds kind of like prepare your stuff. But I think it's kind of beyond that.
Oh, yeah. It's. I mean, you can use it in business. I mean, when the customer walks in my store and observes how my store is laid out or whatever, does that make them want to buy something, you know? Or if you're dropping your kid off at school, you look up and you see somebody that looks shady. Okay, I'm looking at this guy. Do I need to grab my kid and make sure he's okay or what? So it applies across life.
Yeah, interesting. And I've noticed with your podcast, you managed to avoid the temptation that I've fallen into a couple times, which is that I get kind of political every once in a while. I've been reminded by others that, you know, there's some people out there who are preppers who might actually not have the same political beliefs as me, you know?
That's true. And that's why I've avoided it. So I'm actually in the process of starting a YouTube channel that will be, there'll be information driven, and I'll give a basic information on something. I'll provide details and resources, links. Right now I'm working on a video for the whole Iowa caucuses, and I'll give an informational video. And then if somebody wants to hear my conspiracy political stuff, they can listen to another video. But there's preppers from all walks of life, all religious orientations, you know, sexual oriented, whatever it is. You know what? Hey, as long as people are more prepared, so that way society's not as crazy if something happens, or that they don't become dependent upon a system that's already overstrained.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to be able to get that, and I really don't care about the politics. Hey, when stuff is bad, no one cares about your politics when stuff is bad. You know, I mean, maybe Nancy Pelosi wouldn't reach over for Trump, and Trump wouldn't reach over for Nancy Pelosi. Other than that, I don't think most of us care about politics when stuff is bad. You know, all my times overseas, when stuff was going bad, I never heard anybody ask what I thought on the Second Amendment. So,
okay, yeah. You're always generally positive, like I said. And I had an episode in my podcast recently called Assorted Rants, where I just kind of belly ached. And I haven't checked the numbers, but I get the impression that not too many people listen to that episode.
You know what, man? The topic of preparedness, we have fun with it. I know a lot of us do, and we enjoy it. But to a lot of people, it's not a fun topic already. Yeah. Just, I mean, imagine most people have seen those people. They don't want to think about anything possibly adverse happening. And okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
And you know what? I still want them to get the information too. I imagine having a rant episode would be kind of fun. But doing it on a regular basis, it's, you know, it's, we got enough stuff in life that's sucking us down, man. So.
That's true. Very true. Very true. On my episode, I get into faith issues every once in a while, and I try to make that relevant to prepping. Is that something that you might get into with your podcast anytime soon?
Faith, as far as like faith religious-wise, I may look at it more of a spirituality, like, hey, man, have a belief in something other than yourself. Have a belief in a moral purpose, a higher good, a higher power, if you want, whatever that is. But I think it's best that people think outside of themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe it's for the benefit of the group at the whole, at some level, whatever that tribal thing is that you're at, that a person's in. You know, it could be humanity. Everybody works for different ideas, but whatever it is, think outside yourself.
And
because, you know, in disasters, you may get tested as far as what is appropriate or not. You know, like a lot of people say, well, you know, I stock up on food. I'm not giving food to anybody. Anybody?
Yeah.
That's pretty absolute. Maybe you don't have any other family members, or maybe you don't have anybody that's friends, but, you know, I have some friends and family. So I try to prepare for them as well.
Yeah.
There's that time where I think it's really beneficial if we know our values, which will kind of dictate how we handle situations.
Yeah.
That gets back to that spirituality.
I hear you. Do you have any rant about the prepper world? I've got one right now, if you excuse
me. What's your rant, man? I got to hear it.
Yeah. It seems like there's a whole lot of emphasis on selling, either directly or indirectly, and not enough emphasis on practicing. That's my rant, you know. I think it's important to have the right equipment. And of course, in my books, I've mentioned different things you should have. But I know it's kind of dull to talk about just go out and practice with what you have right now, as opposed to buying new stuff. But anyway, that's my rant.
I think that's one of the big rants that I don't think you can ever overstate that, because it's so true within the preparedness community. And we're all guilty. I'm freaking guilty of it, man. I got a bunch of stuff that's still sitting in the wrapper sometimes. Like, oh, it was just really cool one night, and I was killing time on Amazon, and you know what? I couldn't help myself. And I need to break it out, and I keep saying, oh, I'm going to go out and do this, and I'll bring all this stuff. You know what? I think part of being a prepper is being a gear junkie. You know, I think it kind of goes hand in hand, and then some of that progresses up into the pack rat kind of phase and the hoarders. You all know who you are out there. I know.
Yeah.
I resist the urge every day. I think at a basic level, if you put something in your bug out bag, because remember that bug out bag, you want to keep it as light as possible and still get what you need in it.
Yeah.
So if you put stuff in the bug out bag and you don't know how to use it and you want to carry the weight because you're betting your life on it, you might want to break it out and work with it. Like, I'm sure there's people out there that have, for example, like the Sawyer Minis that have never broken them out and tried them. And, you know, hey, I get it. But I'm not saying you're bad or you're not a good prepper. I'm just saying break it out at some point and actually work with it so you know how to work the bag and all the stuff. Watch some videos on it.
Yep.
It's that kind of stuff. If you think it's important enough to pay money enough and put it in your bag that you're going to just grab and throw on your back and you don't have a minute to think about because that's what you intend that bag for and you don't know how to use it, you might want to rethink that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of YouTube, it's occurred to me that YouTube is a great resource, you know, as far as just learning how to do stuff.
Yeah, I think it was Rick Austin. He's on my podcast. He called it YouTube University, and I've kept that ever since. And or University of YouTube. I mean, it's amazing now to think about, like, on your phone that's in our hand, you have all the information in the world at pretty much tips of your finger.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in situations, well, not just prepping, but just in general, where I buy something, I wonder, how am I supposed to use this thing? How am I supposed to get it to work? And I just log on to YouTube, and somebody walks me right through it. It's great.
Do you log on to YouTube before you buy it or after you buy it?
Pretty much both. Like, when I'm deciding which item
should, whether you like it or
not. Is it that difficult to use or whatever, you know?
Right.
I just did that a couple weeks ago. I wish I could remember what I bought, but I think it was something for my car, but it was just kind of like, which one of these products is the easiest to use and which is something that I can actually follow along how to use it? And you go straight to YouTube and it's all right there.
Oh, YouTube's crazy. And to think it all started with a guy that wanted to create something so his family could upload videos that they could watch.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, eBay was started with some guy selling Beanie Babies or something like that. And now it's just several billion dollars. And it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon was with books too, you know? I mean, it's amazing. It must be so hard for a young person that wasn't around much before the internet to just understand how different life is today.
I mean, I was stuck in a business meeting the other day and no problem, pulled out my phone and just started reading something. And then it occurred to me that I was in the same business meetings 30 years ago. And well, maybe not that long, but what did I do back then? I don't remember. I mean, the boredom must have been just excruciating, you know?
Or maybe we actually listened.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, I wonder too, though, were there just as many meetings back then, though?
Yeah, well, it makes you wonder. Yeah, maybe it was just more painful to be part of them back then. I don't know.
And actually, though, I wonder, too, if the meetings back then, 30 years ago or whatever, you actually discussed stuff because you weren't just emailing a dozen emails to people in the time it takes you to have one conversation.
Yes, that's true.
You know, so you actually had to meet and talk with people rather than blast out an email to email all and
start
the conversation.
Yeah. And just being face-to-face, that's worth a good 5 to 10 emails right there, you know?
Oh, easy.
Yeah. Well, you were mentioning earlier you have some future projects on the burner there about to come to fruition. How's that going?
Going well, man. I'm working on a few classes. Basically, what I want to do is I've seen a lot of the training, and I've taken it. I've gone online and paid for preparedness courses, not courses that I've seen really that are by people within the preparedness industry. I think they're targeting preppers, and I think they're kind of either parallel outside niches anyway. I've taken their classes and just wasn't happy with the value. If you're going to pay $100, $200 for a class, well, give me at least $100, $200, or actually, you know, be a good person and give me more than $100, $200 worth of value. So
yeah,
I'm going to be coming out with some classes, and basically what my goal is, pretty much every class is going to have a free version of the class that may not have all the bells and whistles and that of the higher paid versions. And you know, I haven't monetized a dime on my podcast yet. I don't think. Actually, I take that back. I did one affiliate link and a couple of Amazon things. So I think I've made like $150 in 3 years off my podcast. And for those of you who know, it takes $30 a month just to host it on a site that you have to upload your stuff to. But no, I want to give people a ton and ton of value and education. I have some good research. Again, I'm not teaching bushcraft. I'm not a bushcraft guy. I'd love to be. It's just not my wheelhouse. So I have a lot of resources that I'm going to pull together, a lot of people that I'm going to bring in and try to do some stuff so I can get other people in the community involved in the classes, mm-hmm. the preparedness community. So it's more of a group kind of effort on like what's the best practices. I think some of the classes that people put out that do them solo, is, you know, I can go in my bathroom and talk into the mirror all day long and I'll be like, wow, that's the greatest thing ever. And it's not always. So I could have a committee of the 100 best preppers of all time. And even then I'd say, you know, it's one more tool in your toolbox.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking at trying to do some stuff like that. I'm bringing out a daily podcast in the next few months. So kind of ramping everything up. So that way it's all the production, all the stuff that takes a lot of time for podcasts and all that. Because as you know, one podcast episode can take you half a day to a day, depending on what you have going on.
Yep. So this is going to be, I guess, in your area where you live?
The podcast?
The classes.
So the classes are going to be virtual classes. So I want to give people the information. So I'm going to be coming up with mindset. I may do some in-person classes depending on what people want to know. And I know people hate the term experts. Well, there are some experts out there and I don't propose to be one of them. And I know some guys that really know their stuff when it comes to mindset, security, situational awareness and all that. So being able to match people up, just to see what works for people. Again, it's about bringing value. It's like the anti-RFID wallets that are out there. Those are good pieces of kit. They help protect your stuff, especially like if you're a traveler. Nowadays, with all the RFID chips and skimmers, I mean, people can get your information real quick. Those anti-RFID wallets, I see companies selling those things for over $100.
Okay.
Over $100, and they are not anywhere close to that. So giving people value so that way, you know, they can stretch their preparedness dollar. They can get as prepared as possible because, you know what, maybe – I'd got to go back and look, see what those wallets typically cost for a company to purchase. And maybe it saves somebody, even if it's $40, maybe it saves somebody $60 that they can go put to some more food that'll keep their kids fed for an extra few days. You know?
Well, you know, I respectfully disagree. I think you would be an expert. It sounds like your Army training, you know, if you share some of that, it sounds like you might be kind of modest. I think an Army Ranger, that's pretty intense. And thanks for your service, by the way.
Thank you. You know, it's all kind of relative. I think it's like in professional athletes, right? You have the guy that's hoping to get a contract signed every year. And then you have the guy that's like, you know, getting the $20 million, $30 million bonuses. You got Alex Rodriguez getting $130 million or something over a few years.
Yeah.
So it's all kind of relative. What I know is I probably know more than some people. And I know there are some really good guys and women out there too that know a hell of a lot more about a lot of this stuff than I do. So I think there's always room to learn, man. That's what I love about this stuff. You with your legal side, like we were talking about earlier, I think the legal side is one of the most overlooked and underappreciated side of preppers. And preppers, attorneys, you know, if you saw a snake in an attorney laying in the road, what would the difference be? And I think the thing was there would be skid marks before the snake.
I've heard that one, yeah.
But, you know, a lot of what preppers do, we look at stuff from an apocalypse level event a lot of times, and it's like, who cares about the law? Because there's no law when this happens, right?
Yeah.
Like we said earlier, I've been prepping since high school, and since high school, you know what?
Legal issues
come up. All my prepping's been done in a lawful society on whatever level that is. And so staying abreast of that law and understanding it so you don't get yourself in trouble. I mean, heck, we're preppers. Everybody loves their firearms. And you can lose your firearms real easy in this country by, you know, we can argue Second Amendment and all that. So I think the legal side's super important on stuff.
Thanks. It's good to hear. Okay, so are you still going to be on the website mindforsurvival.com, the number 4?
Oh, yeah. I'm keeping that one.
And you're going to be every day another episode?
So, yeah, I'll be having a daily episode. So the episodes I'll be doing, I'll still have my weekly Mind for Survival podcast. Okay. I put that on the shelf for a little while so I could do all this other stuff. I just didn't have the bandwidth to do everything. Once that relaunches, I'll also have a shorter podcast each day. So I'm looking to do, my podcast will be about probably 5 to 20 minute episodes. Okay. On the other days, you know, out here, my commute usually was always 15 to 20 minutes because I don't like driving in traffic. So I always try to live near work usually.
Yeah.
And I couldn't listen to a full episode of a lot of people's podcasts just driving in and then maybe home from work. So this way it's like, hey, I'll give people like just 5 minutes and give them maybe something that helps improve their day or helps improve a situation for them.
Okay. So can you give the various websites? You mentioned a YouTube channel and every place that our listeners can contact you.
Go to mindforsurvival.com with the number 4, and that would be perfect because from there you get to all my stuff.
Okay. Well, thanks and all the best to you, Brian Duff. Thanks for joining us here on the Survival in Motion podcast.
Man, thanks for having me. I loved it.
Thanks.